What's up, everyone? Welcome to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. Once again, I'm Drew Mentak, your host, joined by Irish Illustrated senior recruiting analyst Eric Thomas and 24/7 Sports national recruiting analyst Tom Loy. Once again, Notre Dame hasn't added any new commits since our last episode, but we do have news to discuss regarding the class of 2027. Quarterback Champ Mons has suffered a shoulder injury on his non-throwing shoulder that requires surgery, and he'll miss the rest of his senior year. As a reminder, Mons reclassified earlier this year from the class of 2028. So his high school career ends after only 18 games played. Eric, what's your initial reaction to this news?
Yeah, I mean, it's a major loss, right? Like, obviously, for Vero Beach, they're losing their starting quarterback. But from the Notre Dame recruiting perspective, like, the biggest question about Champ was just, like, you see these flashes of talent and you see this guy who can clearly, you know, do a lot of incredible things in a football field. But he's played in, I wrote about it yesterday, it's 18 total games where he recorded a stat. Max Preps, lists 19 games, but one of them doesn't have anything recorded. So in three years, he's played 18 games. 12 of them came 2 years ago when he was a freshman. He'll have missed almost 20 games in two seasons between an ankle injury, and then last year he also suffered an injury in his non-throwing shoulder late in the year. So it caused him to miss a playoff game. I'm not sure if this injury is a re-aggravation of that or is something similar or different. It hasn't been expressly clear, but that's two injuries to that same shoulder and an ankle injury in about a calendar year. So it's just a difficult situation for everyone involved, because at the end of the day, this kid needs reps. Like, if you're going to come into high school, especially as a reclassified prospect, and cut off a year of data and experience meaningfully, you need to maximize the rest of your time. And at this point, you know, he's obviously not able to. So hoping Champ gets better and that everything is successful. Obviously, you want him to round in the form and be able to recover from that and to the best of his ability. But from the Notre Dame perspective, it is suboptimal, because now you have a quarterback room that, if CJ Carr is what we all think he is over the course of this year and heads to the NFL, you're looking at two freshmen who maybe there's a lot of excitement about, but they're unproven, and a guy who basically needs live reps in order for you to understand what you have there. You can't even really project confidently. So it's a little bit difficult. I think it does open the doors potentially for a transfer, specifically like an underclassman type of transfer, to come into that room, especially if they feel like, hey, we're not sold on Gerard or Grubbs as the quarterback next year. We might like their upside. We might like where they're going. But, you know, there's just a couple options now for what this could look like. Whereas if maybe he had gotten this year and you're a little bit more confident in what you're getting in Champ, maybe some of those doors remain closed.
It's definitely a blow. Like, no argument from me. I was super excited to see him at some point this fall. I reached out. I looked at the schedule. I was making some plans. The injury leaves me, and I think our, you know, I can speak confidently for our scouting team and our national team, and leaves us with some questions. You know, he hasn't played a ton of football, like you guys mentioned. The game against St. Francis Academy was going to be a huge test, and I just feel like there was some opportunities this year for him to quiet any critics and really show what this kid can really do on the football field. But now we have to wait and see. We'll see how things progress over the next couple of months. The physical tools are obviously there, no question about it. We just need to see more on the field, really, when it comes to Champ Mons. And, you know, now we're going to have to just wait down the road. So, honestly, just to kind of sum it up, I think the evaluation just became a little bit more difficult. We were going to see him against a really top-tier defense, loaded with defensive line talent, linebackers in the secondary. Like, we were going to see what he can do against guys that don't necessarily look like me and you. And I think that's the key. Like, I think that's what we were all fired up about. Like, this kid, he's got the tools. He's got the traits. Like, can he put it all together against a really high quality opponent? And we didn't get that. And so, again, it's going to leave some questions, but great kid, great people around him. Notre Dame's very excited about him. But I do think that in a variety of ways, there's a lot of question marks at this point.
And kind of already answered this a little bit, and we'll get to more subscriber questions later, but we do have a related question from GW5. How concerned should Notre Dame be about Champ Mons missing another season? Any chances he unreclassifies?
I mean, I would just add that kind of like what Eric said, the lack of on-field football is concerning. You want these guys to take live reps, and you can't really replicate live action in any way. So Mon's the confident kid. He plays that way. You get to know him like he's an alpha. So that part is not going to be an issue in any way. I just wish he had 10 more games under his belt and what he was going to do this fall. I think that was going to be, he was going to answer a lot of questions. I haven't heard anything about potentially reclassifying back to the 28 class, but with the injury, I think it was what an ankle injury last year and then the injury now. I think a lot of things when it comes to Champ Mons are up in the air at this point, in September with a couple months left in his junior season, or see, I'm sorry, his senior season.
Yeah, and to kind of go off that, just like Tom, I've reached out to a few folks. I haven't heard anything in explicit terms about him unclassifying or rolling things back, but I have heard that kind of moving ahead. I think the way it was put to me is they're considering all paths to make sure that he's healthy and kind of taking this next step. But what I will say is from Champ's statement and from kind of hearing from some folks down there, they're all talking about this, like this move gets him healthy to start his career at Notre Dame. So at least for right now, I think the operating assumption is he's going to remain in the 2027 class. He's going to be healthy and he's going to enter South Bend with a clean slate and kind of a next start. I think that's up to whoever, the eye of the beholder, to decide, hey, is that the right move for him or is that the best move? But at the end of the day, like Champ and his folks, they seem to believe that he's going to be healthy. He'll kick off his next steps at Notre Dame. And barring a major change, I would assume that that's going to hold.
Not to speculate, but kind of just to, I guess thinking out loud, like the way you bring that up, like I was told he was playing in this last week's game, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. And they were, I think everything kind of came to light game day. So it makes me wonder, like, was this a preemptive move of like, hey, he doesn't need to be taking hits, he doesn't need to be doing this anymore, and he's shutting it down and focusing on Notre Dame to get healthy? Or something reaggravated, or like it, again, it kind of goes back to like all of the question marks, and I don't want to speculate because we're still talking about a young kid and injuries and things like that. But it just speaking candidly, like I'd love to know a little bit more about what went into this decision. Was it, hey, let's just shut it down, stay as healthy as possible, get as healthy as possible, and prepare for Notre Dame? Obviously, don't really love that because you want to see more on the field. And look, this is your senior season with your boys and people you're close with, your friends, and like are you shutting it down because you're kind of focusing more on yourself rather than your team? Again, I'm not taking shots. It's not where I'm going with this. It's just more of like spitballing. Like it just brings up a lot of questions and it makes me think a little bit out loud. So, kind of curious to see what things are where things are trending behind the scenes on this one.
It's a little bit of a shame too, because like for Champ and for Jackson Hill, the offensive lineman who's also going to miss the remainder of the
Yeah.
season, like both of these guys are guys who we love the tools. Like when you watch them on film, you see why people are excited. It's very visible, it's very clear, but it's also like for both of those guys, you just wanted to see more of it. You wanted to see them
Yeah.
do more things. You wanted to see them do more things against better competition. And like you really wanted to verify some of these assessments you're making where it's like, all right, Jackson Hill just de-cleated that, 5'8" defensive end, and that was awesome. But I want to see him do it again against a 4-star. Okay, I've seen him do it against a 3-star, but let's see him do it against a 5-star. He had those opportunities this year. So for both guys, it's just such a shame that this injury came and kind of derailed things. An opportunity where I think we were starting to get quite a bit of validation about, hey, these tools are matching up and these guys are making progress. And at this point, what are you going to get on the other side? You don't really know.
Well, I think too, I remember it's kind of a tangent, but going to see Dante Moore when he was in high school in Detroit, and I saw a practice and you're like, this kid just looks like he's better than all his teammates. But then I saw him 2 days later against Cass Tech, which is like a Detroit powerhouse. All the linemen were going D1 to Michigan and Michigan State and stuff. And just like his stats weren't incredible, but just seeing his like composure and challenge and how he handled being overmatched in that situation, I felt like told me a lot. And obviously now he's a projected top 10 pick, not comparing Mons to him, but just seeing how you deal with that type of situation is unfortunate because I feel like as a quarterback, showing you can keep that composure even when things aren't going your way is a really important skill too. So with that, we want to get to some more positive news. Tom, you recently spent some time with Notre Dame commit in the 2027 class, Abraham Cisse out of Downington East in Exton, Pennsylvania. The five-star edge rusher is a number 22 overall prospect in the class, and that's according to 24/7 Sports. So Tom, tell us a little bit about your visit and what you saw in person out of this highly coveted prospect.
The raw talent is there, man. There is insane potential when it comes to Abraham Cisse. I fully believe that we got this one right at 24/7 Sports. I called that night our director of scouting, Andrew Ivins, and I basically told him and Hudson Standish and Gabe Brooks and the gang, like, you guys nailed this one. I think that you guys got this one right. You cannot teach the type of motor that this kid plays with. He is constantly in motion. He's constantly running and moving around, and he brings so much energy and passion and effort. He's super active, he's physical, he's violent, and yet he still has this lean frame that, he's going to fill out so well in the first 12 to 24 months of being at Notre Dame. So the tools are there, the intangibles are there. I just think this kid has freak potential to be an absolute star. When I look at Abraham Cisse, you get to know him as a person, as a player. I mean, he is absolutely the kid you bet on, not against. He's a great teammate. His friends, the teammates, like everybody around him gravitates towards him. I showed a clip of him playing tight end at one point because I wanted to see him kind of brushing some guys off and that we're doing some extracurriculars after. And he was basically like, get the F off me, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's got that dog about him too. So again, raw talent right now, but man, he is the exact type of clay you want to mold together and turn into a first round pick, second round pick down the road.
Yeah, I think that should be exciting for Notre Dame fans too. I think the motor part, especially for a defensive lineman, is so significant. Like you can have all the tools, you can have great technique, but if you're not willing to like put in that effort and grind and be excited to practice and competitive, like it's really hard to develop into the prospect you want them to be. You can have all the tools, but
That's one thing that blows my mind. Like, you watch a lot of kids and they'll be on one side of the ball and then the ball will go away from them and they'll run right or they'll run left or whatever, opposite of like where the action is. And most guys are just gonna like dilly-dally and hang out and put a hand on a guy and whatever, keep it moving. But Cisse would like get off his block and just immediately go elsewhere and follow the ball and run and try to get contact. And I just That's the stuff that you can't teach, and that's the effort that like you love to see. And this is a five-star player making a ton of money, going to go to Notre Dame and be a wealthy kid and all that. Like, he doesn't need to be doing this, and yet again, it speaks to the kind of kid that he is, the program he's a part of, his family, everybody around him, and just kind of like what kind of prospect this truly is. So again, there's certain things about him that make you want to gravitate towards this kid and bet on him. And I think, man, more than ever, I think Notre Dame landed a good one in Abraham Cisse.
definitely good news after a little bit of bad news. And then we also wanted to get to something. We do have some visitors coming up this weekend. Notre Dame has its first home game versus Rice on Saturday, and then they'll have another one the next weekend versus Michigan State. So we're still in the process of confirming visitors. But just in, for instance, this weekend versus Rice, Notre Dame will have a few commits on campus. Edge Jackson Vaughn, another high motor guy off the defensive line, linebacker Roman Igwebike, and Edge Darian Prescott. So some big names coming that weekend. And then Michigan State Champ Mons is supposed to be coming. We'll see if the injury maybe impacts that at all. Cornerback Ace Alston and then long snapper Sean Kraft. Eric, is there any other, those are the commits that we think will be on campus, but are there any other prospects worth highlighting that we are pretty confident will be on campus or that you think are going to be there?
Yeah, for this weekend, there's a few guys, and obviously we're still working to confirm, but there's two guys that really jump out at me. Number one, 2029 linebacker Austin Phillips. He's a top 100 prospect. He's a ton of interest in Notre Dame. 6'2", 215. This kid is a workhorse. I mean, he's dedicated to the craft. He wants to get better. He's already considered one of the top prospects in 2029. He's been around Notre Dame before, Indiana kids. So he's definitely an interesting one and one to watch. And then Jeremiah Figueroa, an edge rusher from Massachusetts. He's considered like a top 150-ish player in the class of 2028. He will be there this weekend. At least as far as we know right now, he's set to be there. So those are kind of two big ones. And then heading into Michigan State, we actually have quite a visitors list. Like I know Miami's been getting the play a little bit, and I wrote about this more kind of towards the in the middle of August, like kind of what the weekends were looking like. But from a Michigan State game perspective, I mean, Xander Edwards, the Notre Dame legacy running back, is expected to be there along with his father. Jace's Walton, or Jace Walton, excuse me, Jonas's brother is expected to be there. Wide receiver Kellen Miller, who's now at IMG Academy, originally from Michigan. He's been around Notre Dame a whole lot. He's going to be there. These are all class of 2028s, by the way. Class of 2028 wide receiver Maddox Porter, who is listed as the number four player in the class of 2029, he's expected to be there. For people who follow tight end recruiting pretty closely, I know that's a big thing here at Notre Dame. Jack McNamara and Grant Bowen, two of the top ones in 2028, are expected to be there. Wyatt Van Boning, one of the top tackles in the 2028 class, guy who's been around Notre Dame before, will be there. And then from the defensive side, like, this is a loaded group of defensive line visitors, which I guess we should expect from this point from Charlie Partridge, right? But just a couple of the guys who are set to come: four-star Asa Birch, four-star Cam Toomey, both in the 2028 class, four-star Luke Neighbors, 2028, four-star defensive lineman RJ Wims in the 2028 class. And then there's several really good linebackers and defensive backs coming, including a guy Tom and I have come on here and talk about in the past. Langston Pridgen is expected to be there. I know we both like him quite a bit. In the linebacker room, which I know is a hot one, Jameer Miles over at Carmel Catholic lines up right next to he lines up next to Roman Igwebike, excuse me. There's a couple of guys who are just really, really good players expected to come here. So
Just a couple that stick out from those two. Austin Phillips, for sure, the 2029 linebacker. He actually goes to where my wife went to high school. So I'm in Kendallville, Indiana, a lot. And I've known about Austin Phillips for, like, I feel like 2 years now, but really burst on the scene last year in the state, and as they were kind of in the state playoffs. Went and watched him, and it was kind of like immediately texting and calling coaches like, hey, this is the guy you need to get on in 29. And I'm not saying that because of any ties or connections. Like, and look, again, another kid that's going against people that are like me. They look like me. Like, the competition's not great, but he is a dude. And look, he's really good at running back, but he is a linebacker all the way. He's rocked up. You see the workout footage. I think Notre Dame is going to be very tough to beat. Indiana is in play for sure. They just recently offered Ohio State, Michigan State. Like, this kid's going to stay in the Midwest. I'd be shocked if he leaves home. But they are Notre Dame fans, and the Irish are going to have every opportunity to land this kid and make sure he stays home. And I feel good about them getting that one done. And then moving on to the Michigan State game, I mean, look, Maddox Porter is a kid that I saw heading into his freshman year. He was technically still an eighth grader, and I was at the Sevens 7-on-7 event in Atlanta, and I will never forget. I was with Clara Sales, and I know she knew a lot of people in the Nashville area. And I said to her, she does a lot of our stuff, and I do live commitments. She's the one that's behind the scenes, does a phenomenal job on the video and photo side. But look, Clara also knows ball, and she knows talent. And I asked her, like, who is that kid? Because he looks like Talon Taylor, who's at Georgia, a kid that I got to know really well and covered and thought he was all world. And I'm like, this kid right here is going to be special. And they were literally just running around doing warm-ups to play their first game. And she goes, this kid is about to be a freshman in high school. And I was blown away. I'm like, I walked up and told him, I'm like, bro, I don't think you realize, like, your life is going to change in the next year or two. Fast forward, goes to BGA, has a phenomenal freshman season, max preps freshman of the year. Like, I'm gonna pat myself on the back for that one. That was one that I feel like this kid is just different. So if Notre Dame, and again, talk about a kid that's a phenomenal fit, like, he's gonna command a high dollar price point. We'll talk about money and receivers later in the podcast, but this is a kid that's gonna demand a top dollar, and it is what it is. But like, when you're looking at fit and you're looking at potential, and he checks every single box of a kid that Marcus Freeman, Mike Denbrock, Mike Brown want to recruit on the offensive side of the ball. So they need to lay out the red carpet. I know he's only a sophomore, but do it now so you enter the race, because right now, in my opinion, I think Oregon, Tennessee, like, they have a stranglehold on this one. Notre Dame needs to lay out the red carpet and make an impression on this kid, because he is special, special, and they have that opportunity in 2 weeks.
Awesome. And then when I end segment one, we had interview with running back coach Ron Sider a few weeks ago, and he talked a little bit about the recruiting process with the media, including getting into that, like the importance of seeing prospects in person, because sometimes kids will put highlight tape out that isn't even their own. Obviously, in the age of AI, I feel like that's even more important, where you can speed things up and make things look a little more dynamic. But he also talked a little bit about the traits he looks for in running backs in general too, and he talks about you want to see them in practice, see their football IQ, get them in the meeting room. And he said to me, short area quickness for running back, that's a must because we play between the tackles. Everything happens in space. Everybody gets caught up in speed. That's great. I'd rather have a guy who isn't afraid to play between the tackles, stick his foot in the ground, get vertical. And so I'm kind of curious to get your guys' take on, he's now recruited four running backs or gotten four commits slash signees since he's been the running back coach, taking over for Dylan McCullough. What do you think, Lathan Wisenton, Isaiah Rogers, Jonas Walton, Javion Osborne, how do those guys fit into kind of what he said he's looking for? And are there any particular guys who stand out? And Eric, we'll start with you first.
Yeah, I mean, I think all four of those guys kind of hit the mark of short area quickness. Sorry, cat's trying to knock over my coffee here. All four of those guys hit the mark with short area quickness. Like, obviously, Walton and Wisenton in particular have quite a bit of speed, top end sort of straight line speed. But all of those guys are one physical runners. They're willing to take on contact. They're willing to go between the tackles. They are willing to run through an arm tackle and kind of throw a shoulder. But two, they can make guys miss in a phone booth. All three or all four of them can. So it's sort of a unique combination where I think really what he wants is running backs who are going to understand their assignment and be able to attack that assignment the right way, right? Like there's so many running backs we talk about, and this was even the fear with some of the freshmen, Jeremiah Love back in the day. Like if they're not willing to hit the hole and kind of get north south and be aggressive, you kind of have a little fear because for all the other tools, at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to get those tough yards. And none of these guys have that fear. There's no concern. There's no projection with that. These guys are all tough downhill runners who, if they got to just, hit a hole and go, they're willing to do that. They're capable. But beyond that, I think the biggest thing is he talked about toughness. And for the one that really jumps out to me for toughness, like, look, obviously JV and Osborne's worked through some injuries and played through that. That's toughness. And but really, the one that jumps out to me is Jonas Walton. And last year, when you would watch them, Jonas would line up as their running back, as their fullback, as a tight end, as a flex out receiver. He would line up basically as like a almost like he was in the slot, but then he would motion in closer to a tight end spot so he could lead block. Like, he took a number of assignments, a lot of which ended up with him basically taking on an edge or a linebacker as a lead blocker. Some pretty dirty work. And he took that on willingly. He was excited. And then, he'd pop out like one play later and get a 60-yard touchdown off of a pass. And it was like he waited for his opportunity to maximize it. Like, and so, to some extent, like that is toughness. This guy's taken on the dirty work. He's taken on the jobs that maybe not everybody in that backfield wants to take on. There's a real selflessness to that style of play. So I think all of those guys embody that, but it's tough to find a more all-encompassing version of what he described than Jonas Walton.
I just to kind of sum it up, like I just think that this comes back to the type of person Marcus Freeman wants on his staff, which naturally bleeds down to the type of kid Freeman and his staff want to recruit. Like we're talking great human beings, smart, handle themselves well on and off the field. That's the kind of person Marcus Freeman's going to bring on staff. That's the kind of person and player he and Juwan Sider want in the backfield. So, does things right on and off the field, great people, when it comes to just players themselves, like guys that are just confident, traitsy. They need to be selfless because you are going to share the ball in the backfield. They need to be dogs. And when you look at Wisington and you look at Rogers, Walton, Osborne, even the guys that were holdovers from McCullough that are in that room, I mean, they are, it's again, it's the same type of kid, same type of prospect. Like, is Jeremiah Love on the roster right now? No, but very few Jeremiah Loves exist. So they have a bunch of very good running backs that are great teammates. I mean, that the bond in that room is something different. It's something special. So again, that starts at the top with Marcus Freeman and then obviously Sider as well. These guys are comfortable sharing and splitting carries and just being selfless teammates. And I think that looking ahead in 2028, I feel like some of those guys that they're recruiting check that box. You know, we're talking about top 247 running backs like Zaydon Jernigan and Ace Lee Brown, two of the best in Mississippi in 2028. Xander Edwards, obviously everybody knows about Xander, top 247 back, legacy out of Florida. Michael Rhodes, top 247 out of Texas. And a guy that I think that Notre Dame has continued to trend in the right direction for, battling with Georgia and Oregon, a few others, is Elijah Cromwell. I mean, he is a guy that Sider badly wants to land, a super talented kid from Colorado. But again, all of these kids check the same boxes of great kids, great people, great to deal with, would be media friendly, great in the community, great on campus, great teammates. Again, that's the kind of kid that Juwan Sider and Marcus Freeman want to recruit and bring to Notre Dame. And so far, they're doing a lot of the good things with that backfield because they are this group. I know it looked a little spotty at times in week one against Wisconsin. Like, they are going to, and it showed, it started coming to light in the second half. Like, they got some dogs in that backfield that it's gonna pay off this fall.
And I think, yeah, even this weekend, we'll see if Walton can get on the field a little more. I think he can add something dynamic, as Eric mentioned, to this offense. If he can, I know pass blocking might be a little bit of an issue for a lot of freshmen, but if he can find a role, I think he's got the talent already to contribute on to Notre Dame in 2026. And that will do it for segment one. We'll be right back with segment two, burning up the boards. And we're back with segment two, burning up the boards. We're going to start with a question from Jay New. Will there be any uncommitted, committed elsewhere 2027 prospects at the Rice game? We've already previewed this a little bit, but Eric, if you want to jump in on that one.
As far as I know at this point, no committed prospects elsewhere. We do have some of that coming down the pike here later, especially for the Miami game. There's going to be at least one guy who's committed elsewhere heading into town. But for this weekend, the views or the visitors we previewed, and then just to kind of let it answer the question I didn't mention before, Indiana wide receiver Cordero Bennett. Listed at 6'5", 190, class 2028 prospect. He is listed as a three-star, but obviously it's so early in the 2028 class that I think getting hung up on guys who are low-ranked is not the biggest good use of time. But Cordero Bennett, big-bodied receiver, definitely flash in terms of like what Notre Dame's looking for from the boundary, able to go up and get it, has a little bit of speed at that size. There's some good players heading into town. In terms of the committed prospects, though, like you mentioned, though, it's just the Irish, Jackson Vaughn, Roman Igwebike, Darian Prescott. I'm sure that list is probably going to grow by the end of this week, especially for guys who are in like, Ohio area, things like that.
I think if you're trying to like impress a kid and lay out the red carpet for an uncommitted guy or flip a guy in 2027, I mean, you're looking at September 19th against Michigan State. You're looking at November 7th against Miami. Those are the games you want to lay out the red carpet, make the biggest impression. I mean, look, bringing in Rice and blowing them out or something like that, like it's not really what you're looking for. You want that game day environment that people leave like, I get it. Like, I want to come play here. So look for those two games to be ridiculously loaded, and especially that Miami game. Notre Dame's undefeated. Some schools drop off here and there. Maybe like money talks pick up elsewhere. I think that's the game, Miami, November 7th, where it's like you bring a guy, 2027, top prospect, you're trying to flip him. That's the game you bring him to campus.
And for the people who might be wondering, like, why is Michigan State kind of becoming the number two weekend as opposed to maybe SMU, which is like a recent playoff team and is kind of different? I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, Michigan State's a trophy game. Rivalry games are a unique experience. They bring a unique energy. And obviously, the staff can kind of work and sell and talk about the history of Notre Dame, and it's all encompassing. But two, getting that wide group of prospects on campus earlier in the season is kind of accounting for the moving up of the recruiting schedule. SMU is coming to town in November. At that point, Notre Dame is obviously they're getting closer to signing day in 2027. It's not that they don't want guys there, but for them, they're gearing up for like a playoff run, presumably in their mind. They're just coming off the Miami game. There's a lot of different things going on at that point in the year. Whereas if you get guys on campus in September, a big group of guys, get them there to start the visit season, you can always bring them back if they're interested in coming back. And you're getting a good sort of out ahead look at a lot of these guys before the season starts getting real crazy, before they start trying to enter decision-making mode. And especially for some of these positions like quarterback and like offensive lineman and other positions where the timeline has moved up so much, you're getting a look at them before they start entering that decision-making mode. Whereas there are some people who, by the time they get to the end of their spring, especially for guys who are currently like 2028 class, like they get to the end of the season, they're moving into the off season, they might be in decision-making mode already. You want to make sure you got them on campus and got that look before any of those potential late season movements.
Yeah, and to your point too, that's SMU's also senior day. It's actually a big opponent for senior day this year. There's obviously not that they can't have recruits that weekend, but there's some other priorities for the coaches and stuff going on. And also just getting any night game, I think, at Notre Dame is worthwhile at this point too. I feel since I've been around, that product has improved substantially. I don't know if you get the same environment during the day still, but night, I think Notre Dame kind of really has it going well with the lights and some of the other things they do with fireworks. So I think anytime, even if it's a rivalry or not, like you can get them on campus to see that environment, I think is worthwhile for Notre Dame. And our next question is from Dollar Bills. Are there any more 27 targets to focus on? Is Caden Henderson still in play at all? Is there a high-end wide receiver that we're talking to with the hopes of flipping him?
Notre Dame's in the process of evaluating senior tape right now, and the season just started. New names are going to emerge. I would say one or two guys wouldn't shock me if they end up in this class before all is said and done. Fully believe that things are happening behind the scenes. Guys come out of nowhere, and previous targets reach out with renewed interest. It's just how recruiting works. I don't believe there are any clear names to focus on right now outside of top 100 linebacker Caden Henderson. He is clearly a target you got to keep monitoring. But I'm, not to create a stir, I'm also curious to see what they do at the quarterback spot with Champ Mon's injury, see if they add another high school kid, similar to what they did with Gerard and Grubbs last. I just not trying to speculate, not trying to cause a stir or freak people out. I think it's just something I'm thinking about because there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But I think Caden's the guy right now, and we'll see who emerges probably within the next couple of weeks as senior seasons really start to kind of shine through and rankings get updated and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, Caden Henderson is the name. If you're looking at just like a wide view, I think Notre Dame is paying particular attention to linebacker evaluations, especially guys who maybe are a little bit bigger bodied. I think they're paying attention to potential risers at tight end among the senior class. Now, I don't think that, unlike linebacker, where Notre Dame would really like to add another guy there, I don't know that tight end, they feel quite that motivated. They do really like Titus Hawk, but keeping all options open, especially when the initial outlook for this class was, hey, we want to get Seneca Driver and Jackson Dollar. Like, they're keeping an eye out for potentially a riser, especially someone who has more of that receiving, excuse me, utility like the guys last year. And then as for the end of that question, the receiver bit, I recognize from someone looking at the classes perspective, it might seem like, hey, they're really missing like another wide receiver. They only have two. They don't have this big time. But like, as we've talked about here in the past, like Notre Dame had a real chance to push things down the field and probably close with Osonic Gales and didn't do so. So at this stage, I just really struggle to see Notre Dame making a decision like that and then turning around and being like, actually, we need to go after a top flight wide receiver when they were basically on the goal line with one. So that decision making and process from Notre Dame, over the summer kind of tells you all you need to know about where they're at with receiver in the 27 class. Now, obviously, 2028, that's a different story. There's going to be different guys. There's going to be recruitments to track. We just talked about 2029, five-star receiver who's coming to town. But for the 2027 class, I think Notre Dame sent up a pretty big signal that they're no longer in playing in that sandbox, barring something dramatic changing.
And in a related question to, big time wide receiver recruiting, Sonny B247S has a question on what is the biggest reason or obstacle why Notre Dame cannot recruit the five-star dominant wide receiver? And just for context, I think people seeing the game over the weekend where they don't have that big time wide receiver. Jordan Faison is great, but he's still a former two-star lacrosse recruit. And a better lacrosse prospect coming in. So not necessarily the needle mover from the recruiting standpoint.
It's a Multifaceted question, right? Tom, you want to take a stab?
I mean, I just think it's really difficult to, unless you have a proven track record of development. You know, you look at Ohio State and LSU, you look at a school like Miami, he's got a bunch of dogs in their backyard, they're winning, they're back. Mario Cristobal does a phenomenal job. So Notre Dame just needs to continue developing their guys and continue to show growth at the position. That's going to be key. The more you see guys like Jordan Faison doing things like that, making plays, it's going to resonate with the receiver prospects. It should also be noted that like these top guys, we're talking about the top tier, they command a high dollar amount. We're talking $1.5 to $2 million a year, potentially as much as that over a couple of years. And like, I'm not sure that Notre Dame sees the value in something like that when they can get a bunch of really good receivers for like they did in 2026 for a lesser amount, maybe a top 247 type of kid. So I don't want to act like they're not trying. They're always going to shoot for the stars, and they've been in the mix for elite guys. And in 27, this class, they almost landed Sonny Gales, and he's right there on the cusp of a fifth star. Might eventually end up as one. They were in it for Jameer Brown early, who ended up doing what we all expected to end up at Ohio State, and they landed the number 17 receiver in the country in Julius Jones. And I get it, he's a legacy, and but like they battled for that kid. Oregon badly wanted him, and everybody was paying for him. You go back to 2026, and when I was living in Fort Wayne, you had a kid right there in their backyard, Jerquaden Guilford. They never really pushed for him. Not a lot of schools did. He blew up. He ended up having a great junior senior seasons, and ended up at Ohio State after being, I think, committed to Penn State, if I remember correctly, and finished in the top 75 nationally. So again, another top prospect that if they could have recruited or maybe recruited harder, they could have ended up him landing at Notre Dame. And then I think that the real opportunity is 2028. You have Jalen Adai, who's going to end up a five star. That one's not going to be easy. Obviously, an LSU legacy and what LSU and Lane Kiffin are doing on the opposite side of the ball, like they are going to be very tough to beat. But Notre Dame absolutely checks every box possible for Adai and vice versa. So he is a freak show. If you haven't had the chance to see this kid in person, he is unbelievably talented, and it's great that they have an opportunity to land this kid, because he's going to command a high price point. But he is the guy. Like, that's the guy in 28. We're talking about this question for a reason. He is the guy that Notre Dame lands, and it's like he's the one you have to worry about week in and week out and defend against. I know Bud Elliott was talking about, like, I don't know if Notre Dame has anybody at the receiver position that you're afraid of. I think there's some game planning for sure on the defensive side of the ball with the guys that they currently have on campus. You know, I mentioned Jordan Faison being one of them. Like, there are some guys that put some fear into the defense, the opposing defensive minds. But like, there's not, in my opinion, a guy like Jalen Adai on the roster. He is that special. So he is the guy in 28 that they need to go out, spend every dollar possible to get him, and make sure he ends up in Notre Dame.
One of the national analysts I've been very fortunate to have a good relationship for some time is Tom Lemming, and one of the guys who's been doing this forever. And we talked about wide receivers recently, and he talked about like the market has never been more robust for high quality receivers. Now, obviously, there are levels to this, but there is just a lot of really good wide receivers. And to Tom's point about Notre Dame reprioritizing things, Marcus Freeman has told us for years they want to be an offensive and defensive line program or driven program. Excuse me. Well, what are the three positions that are being paid at a premium right now? It's offensive line, it's defensive line, and it's receiver. And for Notre Dame, looking at that calculus, two of those things are more valuable than the other. And that's just kind of the way that they're looking at it. Now, it's not to say they don't value receiver at all, or they're not looking to bring talent in, but they don't necessarily want to pay above market rates, especially because if you look at it, it's not that Notre Dame hasn't landed any of these top receivers. Now, I recognize we're going back to like Chance Stuckey's era, but like they landed Braylon James and they landed Cam Williams. These guys were like top 100 prospects. The sort of issue is these guys were really raw prospects. There are a lot of tools, there's not a lot of developed skill set with them, and they had to learn how to play the position in college. Now, obviously, James got impatient and went to TCU. You and it sounds like he's actually doing well there at this point. Took a little bit. Cam Williams is still waiting to emerge here at Notre Dame. We heard some stuff this offseason. So it's like they can land some of these guys, maybe a little bit more toolsy, raw side of things, but those are investments. Those are long-term plays, even if they're well ranked. So kind of know what Tom said. Like it's a little bit of priority, it's a little bit of the money that causes it, but The net-net, I think, for Notre Dame is they're very choosy about how they want to approach character and everything with any of their players. And the difference with high-end wide receivers and some of these other positions is just bluntly, like, it's you don't see a ton of these top elite wide receivers in the Midwest. You do see some, but you don't see the same volume as you see in Florida or Texas. And so when you only have a small handful of them in the Midwest, and Ohio State is basically picking and choosing who they want at receiver and sometimes taking these guys off the market, it puts Notre Dame in a really tough spot to try and capitalize on these, limited opportunities. Now that's changing over time. There's more talent in the Midwest the last couple of years, and even at wide receivers. So like the market is more robust for Notre Dame to choose from moving forward. That should aid them, but it's just a difficult situation where regionally, they're not necessarily the top receiver recruiting power in the area. They don't prioritize it the same way some other schools do, instead of looking at the trenches. So it just makes it a difficult proposition to bring those guys in. And then you look at the Notre Dame offense last year, like let's just be honest with ourselves. If you're a five-star wide receiver, you watched Notre Dame last year and you watched LSU last year, and then you watched the first game. Which offense do you earnestly think is going to help you get paid? It's probably LSU, and that's not an indictment of Mike Denbrock's offense, but LSU just has more proven downfield vertical and taking shots to get guys open. And look, now at this point, could we see more of that offense open up like we did over time last year? And CJ Carr and Notre Dame has more proving ground to say, hey, you can come here and be successful? Absolutely. Especially with a guy like Jordan Faison. They just had Malachi Fields get drafted. Will Pauling, I think, is on the 49ers practice squad. Like, there's a couple of data points to point to. But like Tom said, it's not quite the same volume, and you're kind of pointing at it as like a look what we're becoming instead of a look what we are and have been. And those are two very different conversations when you're talking about dudes who are going to make a lot of money and are looking at this as I'm going to be here for 3 years and I'm going to the NFL. Like they're not, if they're only going to be there for 3 years, unless you can really sell them that what you're becoming is what they will experience, they might just defer to, hey, this team's been putting guys in the NFL first round for 10 years. That's as far as the conversation goes for me, right? There's just going to be a lot of that.
Yeah, I think too, with even a guy like sometimes being lucky is a little good. Not that Miami didn't do a good job scouting Malachi Toney, but I don't think anyone thought a
No
17-year-old high school, former high school quarterback was going to turn into the best receiver or second best receiver in college football in 2 years. So sometimes it works the other way. My bigger concern is that Notre Dame missed out on the Nick Marsh sweepstakes because I think even watching the game on Sunday, if they would have had him in that offense, that would have made things look a lot different. Especially having a
KJ
guy like
Duff
that in the
too,
boundary.
man. I mean, no, KJ Duff didn't enter the portal, so they didn't really miss, but like, dude, that dude rocked, and Notre Dame was definitely hoping he was going to enter the portal, let me tell you.
Definitely. So there's other avenues for those big time wide receivers. Notre Dame just missed out on a couple in the transfer portal process, and we'd probably be thinking about the recruiting aspect a little differently too. But with that's all we have for today's Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, and Eric and Tom, always really appreciate you diving in. And I know there's not a lot of recruiting news now, but I think we got some really good information out of today, so I appreciate that. And Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast will be back tomorrow to preview Notre Dame's matchup with Rice and the season, the home opener, I should say, and we'll answer some more subscriber questions. Until then, we'll see you all again soon.